So I'm going to talk in English. I'll do it really slow so Martin and the others could understand me. And for those who need translation, I believe Tomil at the back is giving some translation. Okay, yeah, thank you. The title of this evening talk, we like to give titles to talk sometimes. I'd like to anyway. It's Princesses and Dragons and Myth. And I just wanted to share some reflections actually with you about various subjects in the hope that you'll be benefit for all of us. Once upon a time, like all legends begin, in the time of King Arthur. It's a little homage for Martin. King Arthur was riding through the forest. You know, where is the rani? It's very good at sounds. Sound effect of riding through the forest. And all of a sudden, he was met by a bandit, a bad man, okay, who threw him off his horse and took his horse and threatened to take his life. And after some time, a lot of discussions and so forth, he said to King Arthur, "Well, I'll give you your horse back, but you'll have to answer a question for me." Actually, Elia, that is sitting here with us, is an excellent storyteller, and she tells this story beautifully. I'm doing injustice for this little story, but still. You'll have to answer this question. If you answer this question, I'll give you your horse back and your life back and everything. If you fail, you'll give me your country, your kingdom. So, yeah, King Arthur has to agree, and finally and said, okay, what's the question? The question is very, very interesting one. I'm sure some of you know the question. I'm sure none of you remember the answer. The question is, what do women really want? That's the question. Now, I'm at that point, I have to disappoint you guys because I'm not going to answer that. And the talk is not going that direction. But the story continues. And of course, King Arthur, as it says in the book I was reading, like most men, didn't have a clue. He didn't know the answer. And all of a sudden he ran into this very old woman, little ugly in rags. And she was sort of hanging on to him and saying, "King Arthur, I have the answer for you. And I'll give it to you only if you promise that I will marry one of your beautiful young knights." Okay, so again, he's cornered. Eh? Doesn't have much choice. And to make a long story short, he said, okay. So she gives him the answer, which I will not give you. And it turns to be the correct the correct one, correct answers. So he has to keep his promise, right? And what to do, he goes to his knight, his best man, whatever it's called in English, I don't remember, this young, beautiful man, and explain the situation to him. And this man, you know, like English, are very, very dignified usually. He said, okay, I'll do that. I'll wed this old woman. Her name is Dame Ragnell. I'll wed Dame Ragnell. Dame, like an old woman or dignified woman. I'll marry her. So the night of the wedding finally arrives, and the wedding is taking place. And you know, English weddings are like, whoa, you know, big stuff is going on there, and everybody wears the best clothes, and everyone sees this beautiful young man and this very old and woman, and they sort of feel sorry for him. But he is very faithful to King Arthur. And he goes through the whole ceremony and everything, and finally the whole thing is over and the night falls. And, okay, so he approaches Dame Magnell and says to her, good night, see you tomorrow. So, not so quickly, young man. It's our wedding night. What to do? Promise is a promise still. Okay, his good manners finally take over again. And he comes to her and he bends down more and more and finally kisses her on her lips. That's what you wanted. He kisses her on her lips. Now you all know the continuation, right? You've all been to this wedding. And she immediately turns in a magical way to be this beautiful blonde, blue-eyed English princess. I'll stop here because the story goes on in a very interesting way. It's just for half the day or night, and he has to choose again. The young knight has to choose if he wants his wife to be beautiful by day or beautiful by night. Again, I'm not going to tell you the choice, but I wanted to stop here at this scene, this amazing, amazing scene. Imagine this guy doing something against everything, against his will, against his intuition, against everything. And yet, he's doing it. He's approaching intimately someone or something he did not want to do before, did not want to approach that intimate before. And then what happens? And how really does transformation happens? I wanted to talk a little bit here about feelings, emotions, and the relevance of that to our lives, a little bit to the story. In the Buddhist realm, in the teaching of the Buddha, emotions or feelings are considered to be one thing among five others that are construct a human being. No more, no less. It's like body, it's another thing. Thought product is another thing. Consciousness, another thing. So feelings or emotions or feeling life. And like anything, everything else in one aspect, to look at it is to see that it has a few characteristics. Like everything else in the constructed world, what we call the constructed world. Now, when the Buddha was giving his teachings, I'm sure he never heard of Dame Ragnell, or probably he was not confronted with the much of the Western mind as we do today, on his various forms, beautiful forms, of expressing and talking about emotions. But nonetheless, there is a truth that is going from 2,500, 600 years ago till today about this thing that we call feelings or emotions, more correctly. Sometimes we find ourselves sitting, having what we call an okay sit. Nothing really happens. Somebody snores next to us. It's like halfway through the meditation, but our knees are kind of okay. Like parve, okay. And then out of the blue, that's how they say in England, out of the blue, here comes a thought, a memory. And this memory somehow miraculously presses some buttons in us, and all of a sudden we find ourselves in the midst of such a storm that was totally unpredictable to begin with and seems totally real and unsolvable to end with, and we are just caught inside of it, inside this, it's like a washing machine, a laundry machine, again and again and again and again. And as Martin was using the phrases a few days ago, we replay it, we replay the past and we rehearse the future, and again and again and again we find ourselves totally, totally invested. Many times, often, when we take a look inside and we start to see what is happening in my inner life, and we see the different kinds of emotions that are taking their place there, we don't like what we see. Mostly, we see a wedding full of Dame Ragnells. Many, 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 in many different forms. Oh my God, I can't believe I'm so... I can't believe this is happening. I can't believe I'm feeling this. Oh, I'm angry. I can't believe I'm so angry. I can't believe I'm so full of hatred. Self-hatred is one of our hobbies here. Self-criticism. Criticism of others. All sorts of boredom and doubts, and just the beginning of the list. There's so many things that are going on in our inner life, and sometimes we get to see them. Most times we get to react upon them. So what to do? What to do with painful, with what we call difficult emotions? How do we deal with them? How do we usually deal with them, and is it the most beneficial way? We can have a look at it, at this aspect. Oftentimes, when we sit in meditation and we start to see what's what in our inner life, we are sort of taking aback from what we see. It seems too much. It seems that if we should have, we would have told someone what is happening within us, it's like it will be a big mistake. Like no one should know that. And we are using so many strategies and tactics and many escape ways to hide and to put aside and to not be in touch with what is this actually innocent emotions. And I'm using this word on purpose because I want to invite this quality into our talk today. When the Tibetan Buddhists, they have a very specific, beautiful way of talking or dealing with the difficult emotions. And they sort of classify it into sort of three categories. What do we do with these difficult emotions? How can we escape their very strong grip on us? And the first way that they offer us is to use what they call an antidote. Like when we feel hatred, it would be good if we generate some love instead. If we feel resentful or angry at someone, it's recommended to bear in mind his background or her background and sort of try to cultivate the quality of compassion. So in that way, when something really takes hold of us and we feel totally lost in it, it is advisable to see if it works for us, to try and cultivate the antidote, like the remedy, the thing that is so completely opposite to that feeling that it might shake our system altogether, and we start to feel something else instead. That's one way. Sometimes, however, it might feel as if we are repressing or putting down or putting aside again a big part of our life, our lives. Another method or another strategy we might use and see, really see through that and see what is, what speaks to your heart here, is the offering to see it with wisdom and to see its empty nature. And when we talk about empty nature, there are a whole bunch of words we can say and explain and use a whole bunch of concept to explain what do we really mean when we say empty, empty nature. But in a few words, in a few sentences, just to have the feel or to have the taste of what does that mean, we can, if we feel ourselves stable enough, we can start and see the different causes that created this effect. Like we were sitting, as I was describing before, like almost peaceful even, yeah? And then a thought came. By the way, where did it come from? The blue is not such a good answer, usually. Usually we feel, it's my thought, because I was thinking it, so it has to be mine, plus it has to be true. Anyway, that triggers the emotion. It has this emotion, this specific emotion that came up for us, was triggered by something. It has no existence by itself. Something caused it. It's a fruit of some kind of a tree that in itself was once a seed, that in itself was hidden in another fruit, on another tree, and so on, and so on, and so on. And when we start to look at emotions also that way, we can see them as the Buddha suggested. It's like foam on water. It comes and it goes. It comes because it has very good reason, but then it stays for some time because conditions are such, and then it goes away. This kind of looking into it allows us to take this space that is many, many times needed when we are dealing with emotions. Because when the emotions are strong, which they usually are for us, and they take us, they sweep us away with them, we don't have the privilege even, the moment to sort of say, wait a minute. Yeah. But if we would have had this slight gap between us, or space is more correct of a word, between us and this constructed thing that came in us unexpectedly, like a surprise, really, instead of sort of buying it immediately as ours, mine, mine, and then shrink around it, hide it, and went, waste and spend so much energy trying to push it away, hide it away, conceal it, so no one would see, and us included, our smelly parts, the parts that we don't like to see about ourselves. I invite all of us to reflect a little bit about the meaning of taking some space here. What does that mean for us? And how can we do that? Just step back a little bit. The third method that is offered is something that is very unique and special. I find it's kind of tricky. It's again using a simile of a snake and referring to the emotion, to the difficult emotion, as a dangerous snake that can easily bite us, but it has a beautiful jewel on its forehead. How can we take that jewel without getting bitten by the snake? In anger might be the jewel of clarity. There is this essence of clarity in anger. Just before we get caught inside the stories and solutions and blame and self-blame and so on and so forth, There's this quality, clarity. In passion, there's the quality of bliss. Just before we get hooked, totally, like that, there's this. In ignorance, dullness of mind, there's the quality of non-conceptual mind. The mind that is clear and empty and vast, no concepts, that is also there. It's very interesting to try to see it in the moment, if it happens for us. Just as an offering, does it work for us like that? But with all this, I feel that really the most important thing actually is our relationship to what is coming for us in experience. And we sit on our cushions and many, many guests are coming to visit us. It can be anything, anything with the emotional realm, anything at all. With what kind of mind are we meeting those friends? Usually, with hand on heart, it's a mind that just wants to see them inside somebody else, away from us. And that is majorly what is creating the problem. Because, as I said before, I used the word innocent. And if we can change our point of view on our emotions, no matter how difficult they are, and just treat them as innocent, they came to be because they had a reason. That doesn't matter at that point if we know the reason or not, but they are a fruit, they are a child of something in us. They came and they are expressing this themselves. Instead of fighting with them, instead of trying to hide them or step on them, can we let them be? Can we really meet them as they are? And maybe, maybe like the old ancient myth, this terrible dragon or terrifying old lady will turn out to be this beautiful, innocent, blue eyes, blonde hair princess. There is so much energy that is being locked and caught when we are fighting against parts in ourselves. And maybe it's about time to put down the weapon, turn around and say, okay, I'm willing to kiss you, Dame Ragnell. Now, bear in mind that this beautiful young prince, whatever he was, he did not want to do it, really. He did not feel the attraction to do it. He was even repulsed, and that's all right. We don't need to love what we don't love. But it will be important if we'll be authentic and yet courageous enough to meet whatever there is in the realm of what we call our inner life. As human beings, we are very, very tender. Sometimes we neglect that fact. We do not see it very clearly. We have the feeling that we can put ourselves through all kind of things and it's okay and we can bear it and we can be tough through it and survive it. But a matter of fact that we are quite tender and we get influenced quite strongly from things, even though many, many times we are not aware of that. And we have to take care. We have to take very good care for the conditions in which we feed our body, our hearts, and our minds. Because these very conditions really creates who we are, in a sense. It creates how we feel. It creates how we behave. This work has to be done very, very carefully and with a very big heart, like a grandmother's heart. With two warm hands meeting whatever there is, very kindly, if possible. So taking care is one thing that we are most encouraged to do for ourselves. Just bearing in mind how fragile we are, really. The fact that we are all here today, by the way, doesn't mean that we all be here tomorrow. Life is so fragile, and we never know. We simply never know what can happen to us or to people we love next moment, really. So we have to take good care for the food, for the soul that we give ourselves, and try when we go inside to go inside really gently. We are very tender, as I said, and we cannot go inside with knives. So gently. The other hand, it's quite extraordinary, and we keep saying this and repeating this during this retreat. The mere fact that we are human beings on this earth is quite a miracle. And there is something in us that is much bigger, vast, enormous, beautiful beyond measure. When I was walking today, I was walking at the end of the line when we just walked to this amazing lake. It's a lake, right? Not a pond, as some people would think. We were walking there, and I was walking at the end. And then there was this dog barking behind. It was so beautiful to see that just he was barking. Did you hear it? Some of you heard it. Him, her, it. It was like whining a little bit, like something was wrong with it. And one person after the other sort of turned around and looked to see if everything was okay. One after the other. And few people did it a few times just to make sure that the dog is okay, as if our look can sort of caress it. It seems such a spontaneous reaction that came from many at the end of the line, just to make sure, just to take care. And this kind of reactions are really somewhat an indication of our greatness, of how great we can be as human beings, without thinking about, without processing, without replaying and rehearsing. We hear somebody in need and immediately the heart goes out. We are not going to gain anything from that. It's just a spontaneous reaction of a heart that is free. This gives us some hint, some clue for our potential of how great we could be if we could free our hearts, if our hearts could be free. There's one quote I like especially from a teacher called Nina Weiss, and she says, "I grew to understand that freedom is not about resting in equanimity despite the suffering of loved ones and strangers. Freedom is about the willingness to feel deeply, to fall apart. Freedom is about holding on to nothing. And at that heart of that letting go, that surrender, you discover something sublime and heartbreakingly raw. Call it love, call it compassion, call it kindness. I would like to encourage us all to turn our ears and our hearts into that place that, in spite of all the difficulties we meet in life, in spite of all these waves of emotions, all these Dame Ragnells inside of us, that we do not choose and we do not like to see within. Maybe take a different action. Maybe meet it differently. Can we do that? Can we be as brave as that young knight? And simply approach whatever there is in our emotional life. Simply. With a kind heart. I'd like to end with a quote from Rilke, one of my favorite poets. How could we forget those ancient myths, the myths about dragons that at the last moments are transformed into princesses? Perhaps all the dragons in our lives are princesses who are only waiting to see us act just once with beauty and courage. Perhaps everything that frightens us is, in its deepest essence, something helpless that wants our love. So let's sit with our dragons and princesses for a few minutes together. May all beings know the true love within May all beings meet their own hearts with wisdom and compassion. May all beings abide in freedom.